We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good morning, Grinders! Welcome to the DFS pregame show here on Roto Grinders. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender at Blender HD. If you want to follow me on Twitter, and it's Monday, May 8th. You know what we do on Mondays? It's Mondays with McCool. I bring in James McCool, the co-author, with me of The Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports, 15-hour audio DFS masterclass, as well as The Theory of DFS for Advanced Players. How to apply profitable DFS strategies for advanced players, including custom Excel tools, as written by Mr. McCool. Give me those thummy thumbs early in the morning, right? Wake me up early here with the thumbs and the subscribes and the notification bells to know when we go live. Good morning to everyone in the YouTube chat. James, we're not going to have a show here the next three Mondays, if you're aware of that.
I'm never aware of these things until you tell me on the show.
Well, now I'm telling you, right? Next week, I'm going to be gone. Programming note for everyone. Programming. I mean, I'll say that throughout the week, that from the 15th to the 31st, I will not be here the entire second half of the month of May.
You're going on a cruise?
What?
What are you doing?
I'm going on an Alaskan cruise.
Hey, I guessed it right. That makes sense. Okay.
Right. Well, I tweeted about it.
Oh, well, I don't follow you.
Right. No, you follow me. You just don't pay attention.
I don't pay attention. Yeah.
The 16th to the 23rd is a 7-night Alaskan cruise. Me and my wife and her mother and our 11-year-old nephew. We're going to that. Obviously, we want to fly in the day before. So the 15th, That's why we're going. You know, you don't want to get your flight delayed and then miss the cruise. So that's why you come in the night before. And then right after that, me and my wife are going to Las Vegas for a week.
Cool.
For Double or Nothing, for wrestling stuff. And then coming back. So we turned the two trips into one. It's essentially the only reason we did this. We were originally planning on going to Las Vegas anyway. Like the 23rd to the 30th. Was already booked, but the Alaskan cruise, we got such a good deal that a lot of times the cost of a lot of these things is the airfare these days. So it's like, Carnival's offering like us essentially free cruises. I mean, you pay the port fees and that's it type of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, can we go on one before Las Vegas or after? Is there one like there's a 1-day gap or something or close? So we just like kind of just save money on a flight, and it turns out that it was that, and it was so cheap that my mother-in-law and nephew got a room and coming also. So there we go.
That's pretty sick. I am going to New York tomorrow, actually. So I am. Yeah, we broke this up. You and I are going to be on vacations in the month of May. I will be in New York until Friday, and then Margaret.
New York, New York, or just the state of New York? I mean,
New York, New York.
I'm going New York. To what are you doing in New York City?
I'm going to visit a friend before she starts back up her last semester at Columbia, and then moves back to LA. And I have never been to New York before, so.
Oh, you've never been to New York. Where are you staying?
Man, I don't even, like, right next to Central Park. That's where she lives.
Okay.
So I don't have a great.
You're not staying in a hotel or anything?
No, I'm staying with her. Okay. So that's going to be cool.
Does your wife know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, she's she is going to be here for, like, the first couple days. I know why you're laughing, but, like, she's going to be here for the first couple days, and then she's actually going to go up to Chicago with Damascus to go visit some of her friends, and then she'll be back, like, next Monday. So, like, we're both kind of taking intermediate vacations to go see friends in other parts of the country, and then we'll reconvene Monday after the Diablo 4 beta is done, because I'm just going to ignore her in Damascus this weekend anyway. So she might as well be gone.
What are you doing in New York City?
So we have tickets to the Book of Mormon on Broadway for Wednesday.
Okay, and then, I've seen that. You'll enjoy yourself.
Oh yeah. No, I've wanted to see it for a long time. We're gonna go shopping on like tomorrow. We're gonna go shopping tomorrow night so we can get outfits and everything like that. And then Thursday we have reservations at a Brazilian steakhouse for dinner. And then outside of that, just like hanging out, seeing the sights, going to Central Park, just doing New York things. I told her that one of the single things that I want to do is have an actual bagel, because I've never had an actual bagel.
Oh, you're in for a treat.
Yeah, a
real New York bagel.
Yeah.
What are you planning on getting on it though?
I don't know, bro. Like, I don't know. Why don't you teach me up here? Because you know about this stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, first off, the best type of bagel is an everything bagel.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you get everything instead of some people just like poppy seeds, just like sesame seeds. Why not just get everything?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So you get an everything bagel. You have to get a schmear.
Okay.
Right now, if you want to go the Jewish way,
yeah,
you get cream cheese and lox.
Yeah, so lox bagel.
Lox is essentially like salmon.
Yeah. I've had a lox bagel before, but not like a New York lox bagel.
Right. But a lot of times, depending on the bagel place you're going into, they have all different types of cream cheese. So you could get like flavors and stuff in your cream cheese. I'm not a big fan of any of that, but go for it. But I mean, you don't just get like bagel. Yeah. I mean, you could get a bagel with meat, like you have a roast beef sandwich on a bagel, like have it be like the bread, but really it's the New York cream cheese. And it's the whole thing. And you'll see, it's like now the lox typically cost is expensive,
whatever.
But if you just get the everything bagel cream cheese, like, I don't know what the prices in New York City are anymore, but I mean, you used to be able to get that for like less than $2.
Yeah. Sick.
Right. Probably, it's probably a little bit more, probably paying $2.50 to $2.75 or something like that, but you'll get this bagel and you'll be like, oh, this is breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this isn't some little bagel, and you're getting like enough cream cheese that it's like you went to the store, and, you know, you got like Philadelphia cream cheese, like that comes in a little tin foil. Are you getting that much cream cheese on your bagel?
Yeah, sick. Yeah, I'm excited.
Have a pizza. Well, you're getting pizza too. You probably get
of course pizza. Yeah. So Wednesday night, probably before the show or after the show, I don't know what time the show is actually at. She put together everything. We're going to get pizza, like actual real New York pizza, and get a real New York bagel. And then I wanted to go, like, one of the big reasons why I wanted to go to New York was there was this restaurant called Tetsu that had these burgers that were like, it was like having two cast iron skillets together cooking both sides at the same time. It was like, it looked like an Iron Maiden for a burger, you know, the medieval torture device, but it's closed. They closed it down a couple of years ago during the pandemic. And like, I didn't know about that. So I wanted to go to that, but obviously not a thing anymore. So I'm settling for Brazilian Steakhouse because I love Brazilian Steakhouses. I think they're a terrific invention. And Yeah, just excited for all of the regular New York things. I also plan to get mugged, since I know that's a typical New York thing.
It's not really. It really isn't. Do you have your mugger's money? Always keep like a $10 bill in your sock.
Yeah, yeah. Always make sure that you have a $10 bill. Make sure that you have a baggie of white powder. It doesn't have to be the actual drugs. It just needs to be something, you know. And just make sure that you have stuff to like fend off and give up. You never want to carry your whole net worth with you. Clearly.
Here's a bagel place to go to, by the way. H&H Bagels.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, any place, you go to any bagel place in New York, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But H&H is my favorite because their main location, which is on Second Avenue in the Upper East Side, is like right, like nearly across the street from the Comic Strip Live Comedy Club. So I used to get, I mean, this was essentially my dinner like 5 days a week, five nights a week, because I would be doing a spot or hanging out at the Comic Strip and like I needed something cheap to eat or whatever. And bagel and cream cheese, there you go.
There it is.
H&H Bagels. I think there used to be one on West 33rd Street. I don't know. There's only three locations. There's one on the Upper West Side. I mean, you could trust me. If you walk wherever you're staying, if you walk a total of about if you say I don't want to walk for more than 7 minutes, just no matter which direction you go to, 7 minutes, you're probably gonna be able to hit like 6 places for bagels and 10 places for pizza.
Yeah, so it's not
something like, oh, you're gonna have to. I mean, unless you're hanging out in the center, in the middle of the lake, in the middle of Central Park, you could hit. I mean, you could hit anything anytime. I mean, it's a walking place. Right? You don't have to take a subway to get to a bagel store.
Yeah, she was another thing we were talking about. How I'm going to get from the airport to her place. She's like, yeah, it's like an hour Uber, but it's a little bit faster if you take a taxi. I'm like, I'm not taking a taxi in 2023. Like,
Take Ubers, right. You don't have to. I mean, the only thing about taxis is that you just get out and basically raise your hand.
Yeah, which, so, I mean, cool. Like, that's fine. But it's archaic, you know? Like, I think about the concept of a taxi at this point, and I'm like, that doesn't even sound like something that should still exist in modern society with Uber and Lyft. Like, I just don't. It just does not sound like something that I would ever decide on doing. Maybe that makes me a bad person. I don't know. But I just can't imagine taking a taxi. That is one New York thing that I will not be doing, is taking a taxi.
Okay. You also have to, for breakfast, you have to get a bodega egg sandwich.
Yep. I've heard about that. Okay. Yeah.
Right. See, this is what these, I mean, it's nothing special. It's just, it's, I mean, basically it's a Kaiser roll.
Yep.
With like basically an egg omelet.
Yeah.
Cheese and bacon. But the thing is that you're not going into like a, you're not like going into a restaurant. It's like basically just like, oh, there's the place on the corner, the little grocery store on the corner. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you also get coffee and sandwiches and stuff like that. It looks like it should be unsanitary, but it's not.
Well, yeah. I mean, not super unsanitary. But yeah, that's another thing. And I do like egg sandwiches. Sometimes I make myself egg sandwiches. Sometimes I fry up some eggs and make an egg sandwich. So yeah, that's another thing to put on. And it's funny, like there's so many things to do and there's so many different like New York staples that like, I feel like I don't have enough time to hit all of them, you know?
No, you've already hit on all of them.
Right, but I mean, like, think about the schedule.
You get
like,
bagel, you get a pizza, you get an egg sandwich, you go to a Broadway play, and you get the hell out of there. There you go.
I need to find time for all of these different things. Central Park. I want to go to Central Park. I want to go to Times Square. Like
Times Square, what? You want to go to the middle of that? Have you ever been to Las Vegas?
Yes.
Picture Times Square is like, I want to go to the Center Strip. You know, where like Bally's and Caesar's Palace is like, oh, it's all tourists and a bunch of lights and too many
people. But I like that kind of thing. I'm going to be in New York.
So you could go to like the same chain shopping places or like, let's go to Macy's here.
Jordan, I live in Clarksville, Tennessee. I want to go see some lights, brother. There are no lights here.
Go to Rockefeller Center. That's not that bad.
That's fair. Yeah, I can do that.
It's 50th Street. Okay, you could walk up there. right? You can go to the World Trade Center Memorial if you want, right? You know, that's down in the financial district.
Yeah.
What I would suggest for you is I mean, you were into like metal, right?
Yeah, of course.
You were into like underground stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right. Go to Lower Side. Go to St. Mark's Place.
St. Mark's Place? Is that a
granted, basically the East Village. So like 3rd Avenue and like 11th Street.
Yeah.
And then you could walk down Broadway and go to like Chinatown, that area. I mean, it's just like that would be the area where you get more of like the small shops.
Yeah.
And the small little restaurants and like all independently owned things. And obviously you get all the tattoo places and record shops and like all you know, there's comic book places. There's like, I mean, it's just all these little, it almost looked like they're based out of like basically brownstone houses.
Yeah. Like the cool.
But that would be interesting.
Yeah. That sounds cool.
Right. That would be part of my optimal New York City lineup.
Oh yeah.
Don't bother wasting your time going to Coney Island though.
All right. I will not.
I lived like 10 minutes away. So like I grew up there. There's not, it's not worth it. Trust me. It's not worth it.
David Schneider said, do we talk sports here or food? The answer is whatever. we've done both. We can talk some sports here. I'll talk some sports for a sec.
Are you going to see a sport? You're not going to go to a Yankee game or a Mets game?
No, I'm not about that. I don't even like seeing live sports at like the place that I live all that much. I like going to basketball.
Well, when you're gone, the 5 days that you're gone, how are you going to be running your stuff like from a laptop or something, or just not doing it at all?
Yeah, I took some time over the last couple days to make sure that all of my models, because I used to have it where my models would write to, because I've been doing this since before I really knew Python code, right? So like originally so much of my stuff is just in Excel. So when I originally wrote my baseball simulations, it was actually writing everything to different Excel sheets. So I'd have game results in a different Excel sheet for each game. And then it would read from those and write those to the site, right, where I would have it embedded. So obviously I can't write to my local machine from my laptop. So I had to go in and do a lot of work to transfer everything into cloud and make it so that nothing is being written to my local machine so that I can actually do all of my work from my laptop. And my laptop...
Wouldn't that have been the best way regardless?
Yeah, but I mean... It was.
I mean, I'm assuming why wouldn't you just keep it that way?
I'm gonna keep it that way. It's something that I should have done. It's definitely something that is like a step forward. But when you creature of habit, and it's so much tedious work to rewrite code to write to a cloud database rather than just writing to your local machine. Like the architecture of it has changed in certain ways. I had to open up some different like databases online. I had to develop some new connections. Like it was just, it's boring work that I don't really like all that much.
All you have to do is do a find and replace for localhost and put the right IP address there.
No, it's not that.
Isn't it? Isn't that what you need? I'm just used to when doing web development.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially all your source is going to be localhost or some internal server, 192, whatever, your local machine IP address, whatever.
Yeah.
So for me, for web development, all you need to do is do a find and replace and all of that. And then, okay, now I can upload it to the production server and it'll work.
Yeah. And it is, it's that easy when you're doing something with HTML. But, and now, I mean, it is pretty easy to have it just speak. Like I set up a Google automation account. So now I have everything being automated through different Google requests. And like I have the app machine, everything like that. Like it's all set up. It just took time. And I don't like spending time on stuff like that. Like one of the things that I have found about myself when it comes to work, and especially when it comes to data analysis and data modeling, is if I'm not like solving a problem, I don't like doing it. And that sounds kind of like no duh. Like that sounds like a very obvious thing, but like
what would be the type of thing where where you take time to do something that isn't solving a problem?
This, like transferring everything to write to the cloud instead. Like that, and
it's that, it's not giving you like, but at the end of it, you're not getting a different answer. You're just
right. Yeah. I'm not like figuring out something new. I'm not developing anything proprietary. I'm not building an app. Like I'm simply shuffling the deck, and I don't like busy work like that. Like I have been doing some work with another company in developing basically an API script to pull an API and translate it into stats. And I'm looking at it and like, I was super gung-ho about it at first. And I'm like diving into this API and then it's just page after page after dictionary after dictionary after dictionary. And it's like 14 dictionaries deep into this thing, all for like very baseline stats that are not even advanced stats. Like there's not any target data. There's not any like air yards data. Like it's super baseline stuff. So as I continue to work through this, my drive to finish this project is just in the tank. Cause I'm like, we're not even really going to use this. Like I could develop a script to do this in a miles easier way without using this API. And the only thing that would be lacking is like a little bit of consistency. And so that kind of stuff, it just doesn't solve a problem for me. And it doesn't feel like it, if it's not something that is vital to the structure or doesn't solve a problem, it's really, really hard for me to finish the stuff. So like when it comes to rewriting my scripts to write to the cloud, or when it comes to developing the GitHub scripts and the GitHub code to like actually put together the app instead of writing the app itself, I'm like, I can't like hire somebody else to do this, but like I'm not. I don't like doing that either. So it's just busy work.
I'm very similar when it comes to like when it comes to Excel, mm-hmm. right? Like you wrote like all the custom tools inside Theory of DFS for advanced players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll soon be getting together to add some a little bit more upgrades, mm-hmm. right? When I get back, we'll have a conversation on some further upgrades to them.
Yeah.
But essentially, all the stuff that you wrote for these tools is stuff that I have already did in Excel in a very poor way. And I'm much more likely to do things manually because Excel skills are 10 times worse than yours. Mm-hmm. That anytime that I wanted to make something that was close to what you made, there would always be problems. There would always just be, I would import something and there'd be data out of line. And then I'd have to look for what's the problem here. Like it seemed like all the time I was bug testing and troubleshooting. And it's like, oh, because I'm doing it this way, I need to make sure that all the player names are alphabetical in order because I didn't use proper VLOOKUPs. So it's like, no. Unless the projection and the thing is exactly lined up, it's just going to copy the columns. And if there's one new player in there, everything's going to be misaligned. So I would spend so much time. I would spend 10, 15 minutes troubleshooting like every day of like, mm-hmm. well, what data is not in the right spot? And then cutting and pasting it into the right spot. And then I'm like, why don't I just make something that like does the job, but I have to do a little bit more manual work after everything's done to analyze it. But like, I don't want to have to troubleshoot stuff like 10 to 15 minutes every single day. Mm-hmm. So I don't like fixing those problems. It's like, dude, I'd much rather have it take. If I can make a process, like with your custom Excel tools, you've made a process that normally would manually take 30 minutes into 1 minute.
Yeah.
Right. The way that I would do it is I would take a process that would take 30 minutes and make it 15 minutes. But the other 14 minutes are me just troubleshooting what's wrong to get it to the point where, oh, I only have 1 minute left. And I found that it was I'd rather have it that I'll make something that I could turn 30 minutes into 5 minutes. Right. So it's like, okay, I don't have to troubleshoot anymore. And it's just that the extra 4 minutes now are me having to literally look on one screen and compare it to another screen, mm-hmm. man, and go, okay, what spot is here and what spot's there? Oh, okay. I think that guy's overowned or what this guy's under, like stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, because it feels like I'm doing work. It feels like I'm actually assessing the strategic value of this, but I'm just doing it manually and having to move my head like this rather than have it show up and just show me, oh, here's the three. It has three green values. And like, I didn't have to think about anything. It's just like, oh, the Excel sheet is just going to show me the four most over-owned and under-owned players. Like, in order for me to get to that point, it took me 15 minutes of troubleshooting every day.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, it's very similar to you'd rather get to the point where you're actually like, you're getting a conclusion rather than figuring out a way to turn a 3-minute process into a 2-minute process where like the result doesn't change or anything, but for that other 30, 60 seconds, you're spending 2 weeks of your time just to figure that out. And it's like, this seems like something that I'd rather just give to someone else to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've done work with a lot of different guys in the industry and worked with a couple different pros on developing tools. And what it always basically comes down to is like, I already do this, but can you help me do it faster? That's basically all, like most of my work with pros in the industry has come down to, I already know how to do this, but I know that you can make it so I do it faster and I'll just pay you to put it together.
It's like, or more accurately.
Yeah. Something like that. I have put together a couple different tools. One tool that I put together for a guy was he wanted to put in his portfolio and then have it be a weighted assessment based on ownership, upside, and median projection, and then show the stacks. And he was like, I can get it to where like I can look at it, but I don't know how to get it to where it's an automatically weighted system.
Right, unless you're given that.
Right. And then what
you're given that formula, like, how do you want to weight that? How do you want to assess all of this? Mm-hmm. Like, that's up to them.
I made it so that he could just adjust the weight values. Mm-hmm. He just didn't know how to do it. Like, he just didn't know how to put it together to where he could, like, manually just type in 70% projection, 15% upside, 15% ownership. So that's the kind of stuff. I love doing that. People will come to me. I had another guy come to me, like, 4 days ago. He's like, hey, what do you think about this? And I thought about it for a sec. Like, that might be interesting. Like, do you want to like work on it for a little while? It's like, yep, let's do it. And I'll like dedicate like 3 hours to that because it was a cool little project of trying to find like kind of a niche bet to hit. And I haven't seen other people work on it. And I love projects like that where I get to work on something that I haven't seen other people do. And that really drives my passion. So I was able to put that together and, that's the kind of work that I love to do. That's why I love putting together stuff that is not industry standard. And I think that that's kind of been what my calling card is. It's putting stuff together that you can't really find other places. And that's why I loved working on the theory of DFS so much, was that you just can't find this stuff other places. I mean, you can find, if you wanted to go through all of the audio, and you say it every single show, if you want to go through all of the audio of every single show that you and I have ever done together and that you have ever done on this pregame show for Theory DFS, if you want to go through every video and get all of the lessons, go for it. It's 150 plus hours where you're going to have to sift through us talking
about
food.
More than that. Truthfully, more like 400 hours.
Yeah. And you're going to have to sift through segments of Jordan and I talking about New York food and getting mugged in New York. Like, you have to sift through that in order to find nuggets that matter. Or you could just buy the audio courses where we have condensed all together. You get the second course where we've put together all these tools that make your process that much more efficient. And I loved putting all of that together. And the process of it was so fulfilling, right? It felt so good to finally have it and put it out there and have people stoked on it. That's kind of stuff that I love to do. I just love putting things together that solve a problem for people.
And there are always more problems to solve or more better ways of analyzing data that aren't just like sports related. Like for instance, like you get suggestions for upgrades for the tool set like all the time. Like when baseball came around. And one thing that we don't have in the portfolio trimmer is a trim by stack.
Right.
Yep. So a lot of people that have the tool, there's like, oh, it would be so, I would love to be able to, you know, like if I'm going to smart trim, like we have it by key player. Like that's one thing we added very quickly after it was released, right? Where it's like, well, what happens if you don't want to smart trim these lineups and you wanted like, oh, I want to leave some of these lineups, but not ones with this running back or this golfer. Yeah. Or then it's like, okay, so make it so that we have a drop down and whatever key player, it's like, it's only going to, whatever you do is only going to touch those lineups. So you can keep all the other ones intact. Well, that's well and good for most sports, but a lot of times you're dealing in baseball with stacks rather than batters. So obviously the workaround is to like, well, what player is in most of these stacks and just use that as the key player. But some people are like, well, what if we could trim by stack? Like you have a way to show, I mean, you show in the trimmer, like what stack it is. I mean, you can see there's a Yankee stack. That's an Orioles stack. So it's just a matter of trimming by that. So like these little things of what will make your life easier or do the things that you want to do. Another thing, James, that I want to see if you can do. Okay. I'm bringing it to you up on the show. Okay. We can't do contest simulations in Excel.
No. Right. Well, yes, on a small scale.
On a very small scale.
Yeah.
I want some way, some way of being able for, like, it's two problems to solve. I think one is harder than the other. First off, I would like to know what the top 10, I'm using an X, whatever we're capable up to. It could be the top 3 most likely lineups. I don't have to tell it. I want it to, with the ownership, tell me, like, what is the top 10 most likely lineups? Like, if I give a set of projections and I go, okay, it's been like NBA will be easier because, you know, you don't have to worry about correlation. But just a matter of, like, here are the highest owned lineups, essentially. Here's very similar to the portfolio correlation matrix of figure out. Create the lineups from a way to create lineups from a projection set. And then go, here are the most likely lineups. Now, if you could only get the top 10, I would love it to be, here's the top 500 most likely lineups. Here's the top 1,000 most likely, but I don't know if Excel is going to be able to handle that, or it can. It just, you'll have to leave your computer on and let it run for 4.5 hours.
Well, are you asking to see like the top 5 or 10 highest owned lineups?
Yeah, but it also based on the combinations of play. So like in baseball, like the likelihood of in a Ronald Acuna lineup, you're going to see Ozzie Albies. Mm-hmm. You're going to see Marcell Ozuna. You're going to see Sean Murphy. More like, I mean, baseball is a little bit more difficult because of correlation. Mm-hmm. But essentially, I want to have a way for people to put in a projection set and be able to essentially simulate opponent lineups that they themselves will not be playing, and then run their lineup against that set.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is because a contest simulation, like, oh, I want you to accurately spit out 40,000 lineups that are going to be in the relay throw is number one. That's extremely difficult to do and impossible to do in Excel. But I mean, extremely difficult to do in general. Mm-hmm. But if we keep it on a small scale, a lot of the tools in the advanced course are almost toy tools. Right. It's like, oh, here's a Monte Carlo simulator for 10 lineups.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, well, can we do it for 100 lineups? Like, well, you can. It's just going to take it's not meant to be like if you want to see the differences between 10 different lineups or your lineup versus 9 opponent lineups or something, like, here's something that you could use that you don't need to like build yourself. But it's like, oh, I want to simulate like 276 lineups against each other. It's like, that's really outside the bounds of what you could reasonably do in a time period in Excel. Like, yeah, you can do that in Excel, but it just like put it on in the morning and come back at night and it'll be done. Like type of thing. Like, but same for the portfolio matrix. It's like, oh, I want to analyze a portfolio. I want to be able to create 100,000 lineups and then have it like, dude, you're going to be sitting there old. Like, it's not meant for that scale. Right. You wouldn't be doing that in Excel. You'd be doing that in Python or R or some other program that's not Excel. And once you start talking about Python, like, we're not going to say like, oh, these custom Python tools. Because like, yeah,
go download the Spider IDE and then download this code off of the course and then you can run it. No, we're not.
Right. I think that the technical leap between listening to audio and then running Python is much different than open up Microsoft Excel and it pretty much works. Other than you enable macros and it pretty much works as is. And you don't have to know much about it. So like, I just want to try to find a way to basically generate lineups that are more likely to be played that you're not, dude, maybe you built a lineup and it's in that set and you would just want to compare it to like, okay, show me the top 100 most likely lineups and what's my player difference between the R squared between that and the top 100 lineups type of thing. It's like, oh, my lineup, this lineup is a 5v5 is a 5v5 off of every lineup in the top 100. Mm-hmm. All this lineup, although at the same ownership, is only a 2v2. Like it's a matter of like, it's not just showing like, oh, this one's owned at 180 and this one's owned at 150. It's like, well, this one's owned at 180 and this one's owned at 150, but this other 150 is a 4v4 while this 150 is a 6v6. Mm-hmm. Right? Like that again, but you have to compare it against some type of set of lineups that you're going, oh, these are when we talk about James on this show, the bad lineups, the negative EV lineups. It's always these two buckets of in GPP, they're too high owned or they're too low projected.
So here's
the two low projected ones are easy because you could see like, okay, well, people are going to be like those lineups. I don't have to compare my lineups to because it's like, okay, let me just build lineups that are 70 points lower than optimal. And you could build a million. I mean, it's just those are bad lineups. But to build the ones that are like high owned and go, well, I don't want to play these 100. I don't want to play these whatever it is. And then I want to play ones that have the highest projection that are the furthest away from those as possible. So that it gives you another metric of like, it's not just ownership sum. That it's ownership sum and some type of matter of combinatorics.
Yeah. So here's, I'll put two things in context. So one, I've built contest sims before. I built a contest sim for NBA because, again, like contest sims for NBA, I think are second easiest only to PGA. And that there's a reason why people do.
How big of a contest sim have you built?
I was able to build one. I can't.
In Excel. I'm talking about in Excel, not in Python.
Well, so I'm putting it in context of both.
Okay.
So in Excel, I know for a fact that you can do a contest sim of up to 500. Lineups because I've done that before. And the way that you go about it is you are doing you're basically, instead of optimizing on projection, you're optimizing on ownership in regards to projection. So you're trying to basically build with a combination, like you take.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How should I put this? You take the ownership and you are ranking it based on a percentile of the highest ownership that you can possibly have, and you're multiplying that against projection, and then you are using whatever that projection is as the top projection that you want to use. So, like, the higher the you still want higher.
The highest owned, highest projected lineup is the number one lineup.
That's basically what you're aiming for. Yeah.
Right.
And then you continue to do that through, like, 500 lineups, and then you sim against that.
Right. So it said to... It's weird to say, it's like reverse smart trim in the portfolio trimmer.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're getting rid of the one. You want to use lineups that actually, as you go down in projection, like the ownership stays the same.
Yeah. You're really trying to make it. Your goal in contest simulations is to create lineups that will very likely exist. Another guy in the industry, Evan Chaney, he has done a lot of this stuff, and I worked with him on creating this. He actually used the logic from our duplication checker. He used the logic from that, and I worked with him on creating a contest simulation for NASCAR so that he could use that and guarantee that the lineups were going to, well, be very sure that lineups were going to exist within the contest. He would create those first, and then he would backfill with random lineups.
Right.
And that's what I did with NBA, was the same thing. Obviously, we can't do that in Excel to like a full contest. Like, you can't do the flagship, right? You can't do the 15 in Excel. But when I did it in Python, I would have to create like 6 million lineups, 6 million seed lineups in Python first. It would take about 12 seconds to do that. And then I would iteratively remove lineups that did not have high ownership because they likely wouldn't exist. And then we would get down to the point where we would have 2000 lineups or whatever. And then you'd sim against that. But you can do it with like 500 because you're basically only using lineups that likely exist. You're not really creating those random seed lineups, those millions of lineups that are just like whatever that people are going to play. So you can do it with 500. I think that for the purpose of this, you're probably going to keep it to like 100 just so that you can get a metric of here is what the field's top projection is and how can I project my lineups against that. That's basically what we would be trying to do. And then you could simulate it. Like, you can do a Monte Carlo sim of 100 and 101 lineups or whatever and project your lineup against them and see which one is best. That's not hard. So, yeah, that's certainly doable.
Right. But, I mean, I wouldn't want to do one against 100 for like win probability. I'd want to have the payout structure to get an ROI. Rather, like, the purpose of this would be to run your lineup against the dumb, like, it's not even your lineup, like, to be able to run multiple lineups.
Yes.
Yeah. But the thing is about the simulation. The simulation would have to be one versus 100.
Yes.
For each of the lineups in your lineup set, which makes it even more intensive in Excel to have to run. Because imagine it's not just you can't just say, here's the top 100 lineups and I want you to run my 20 lineups against it and show me the ROI. It's like, well, is it counting all 20 of your lineups with the 120?
Right.
Or is it just each individual lineup against 99 out of the 100? Or, you know, like that type of thing. It's much more useful because to not include your other lineups, because you're gonna get really whacked out results, because the only reason the lineup is in the contest is because you're entering it in. It's not because it's likely by your opponents. Mm-hmm. So to have it be one of the lineups, oh, well, my 17th lineup isn't as profitable. Well, that's primarily because it's very close to your 18th lineup, and that's the reason your profit is gone.
Yeah.
Your other lineup is just beating it out too often. Right, but the field isn't. So if you were to play the other lineup, you'd still be profitable. So like, it's not a matter of that. So if, let's say, we have this set, if I say here are projections, here's ownership, right? We we throw in the Excel document and we go here, throw in the projection, throw in that normal projection, ownership stream, everything. And then you say, here's a button. It said on this other tab, right? Create the 100 most likely lineups, right? Based on however way that we do it, the 100 most likely. And then you on the main screen, you have a payout structure that you could change, right? Winner take all, 100%, like, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or it could be 50% of first, and whatever it would be. And then you go, okay, insert your lineups. And maybe we'd up to 20, I mean, whatever the amount that we could reasonably handle. And then what it will do is run 1,000 sims of each lineup against the 100 or whatever it is, right? So it's going to run top one, the top your whatever lineup one, run 1,000 simulations and show me the payout of this one lineup against these 100 common lineups that are most likely. Then go to the next one and then do that. Then go to the next one and next thing you know, at the end of your when it comes through, the 20 lineups show, you know, here's the ROI of each lineup against that set.
Yep.
And then you could choose. Then you could be like, okay, maybe I have three lineups that are actually unprofitable. Maybe I have five lineups that are really profitable, and you could do it from there. Now, in a perfect world for large field GPPs, you'd be comparing it to 20,000 lineups, and you'd be running, you know, 500 set, but I mean, Excel is going to throw up a dialogue box. It's going to vomit at you trying to do that type of stuff.
The main issue with this is inserting payout structures, because there's no good way to handle it. Like that there's no API feed. There's no way to download it.
Well, manual. I'm just saying you put a default, 20%.
I totally hear you, but I'm saying that part, because of the emails that I have gotten in regards to tech support for these tools, that part is going to throw people through a loop. Certain people through a loop.
Right.
Because you have to go to whatever site, you have to go look at the payout structure. You're going to have to insert your own specific thresholds, because it's not always going to be first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th through 20th, 20th through 50th, blah, blah, blah.
How about this, James? We'll solve this problem. Instead of having a payout structure, have it be like top. Yeah, have it be like, I don't saying you have to make graphs for each lineup, but like how often it, what the distribution of each lineup is. So instead of it saying like, what's the ROI, it's a matter of like, what is the
average finish position?
Right, essentially the top finishing position type of graph.
Yeah,
of like top 1%, top 5%, top 10%. That type of thing. So obviously lineups that are like leveraged with a 2v2 may have like a top 1% finish lower, but a top 10%, top 20% finish higher.
Yeah.
And ones that are very contrarian lineups that still project well are more likely to have a different curve, because obviously when you're comparing against the top 100 lineups, like the ownership on those top 100 lineups are going to be very, very chalky.
Yeah.
Like you're almost like you're simulating 100-man, like a 100-man, like top 12% payout type of contest where people are throwing in like the top owned stack, the top owned every, like where the high owned running back is going to be like 67% owned in that contest. Right. So you're really looking at these like the 121 in baseball, like I wouldn't even call the spy in football, because those are still large, 5,000 entries.
Yeah.
But it's like you're treating like a hundred man single entry type of GPP and going, okay, what against the most common lineups, what are the most profitable ones?
Mm-hmm.
And most of your profit in those contests comes from the top 1% finishes. So they're going to be most likely, from a heuristic standpoint, heuristically going to be lineups that project well, that are as much combinatorically less owned, not overall less owned, but combinationally less owned. It's very similar to the problem that I tried solving with doing, you know, the three mans and the five man type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, I want the highest rejected lineup that is the least similar to two to four other lineups that I expect to be in this contest.
Yeah.
Right. It's like,
that's a very simple application for something like this. Like that would be very easy to build.
Right. But you could scale it up to 100 lineup. Like, I don't want to make it so it's like, oh, you can only compare it to like five other lineups that are likely to be in. It's like, no, I want to compare it to like 100 or whatever the number, whatever the largest number we could get away with. But it's still the you still have to use the ownership to create those lineups. And I think in basketball and in golf and in, it's in sports that have like almost no correlation. That's simple, but like, how do you do it in baseball? Like MMA, I think, would even be simple because you could at least assign the fact that, you know, don't play two of the same fighters in the line, you know, from the same fight. Mm-hmm. But baseball, it's like, oh, you know, I have to assess how on this lineup is. Maybe we'd make it that in the baseball version, like you have to, like, it's going to make five-man stacks. It's basically locked into 5X on DraftKings or 4X on FanDuel. And it's like, that's it. Like, yeah, sure, there may be some 4-3, whatever. It's like, no, we're just, here's the 100 top 5X stacks. Here are the top 4X, and that we're going to call those the 100 most likely lineups.
Yeah,
instead, like, that would be better off than trying to assess that on the fly.
You'd basically, instead of projecting ownership of players and in regards to projection, you would do it in terms of stacks. You would just like, you just find that the highest owned stacks like Atlanta or something, and then you would assign that based on a relational score instead of the players.
You'd combine all the batters together into that one thing.
Right. Yeah. You just lump them.
Okay. This all sounds doable though, right?
Yeah, it sounds doable. The hard part of it, when I'm thinking about it, is that there's a very blunt way to do this, and then there's a more accurate way to do this. The very blunt way is super easy. The more accurate way, is a little bit more difficult, because if you think about the concept of simulating the outcomes of those 100 lineups, right? And I'm glad that people get to listen to this like on the full show, because I like talking about stuff like this. If you think about the concept of simulating 100 lineups, a very blunt way to do it is just to assign a Monte Carlo sim based on the median score of that full lineup, right? And then saying it's going to end up somewhere within a standard deviation either side, and then Monte Carlo sim that out 5,000 times or whatever, and there you go. Like, you can assign random numbers to that and then come up with a median outcome for the lineup. But that doesn't really do a good job of simulating the outcome of a GPP or a contest, right? Because it disregards ownership. You really need to assign it based on the players' median outcomes, because then we can capture if there's like a 67% owned running back, like if he does well based on his random outcome, then the lineups that have him will rise to the top, not just lineups in general. Because what you run into with this kind of stuff, when you're trying to simulate your lineup against other lineups, if you just do it based on your projections, your highest projected lineup will almost always have a top EV score in simulating a contest, because the field is projecting less based on your projection set. But if you do it to where you're projecting based on the median outcome of the players involved, then your top projected lineup doesn't necessarily always beat out the higher projected lineups, because the chalk can rise to the top and beat your lower owned lineups, and vice versa. That's how you really get a good distribution based on percentiles. So I have done this in Python, so I know the logic and I know the framework of simulating these GPPs. I have done the blunt way in Excel, and I'm interested to see if that more accurate way works in Excel as well. That'll be the challenge here. I know that the framework works with the blunt way, but I'm interested to see if that more accurate way works. That's the only challenge.
So this is exactly what you'll be doing when you go to New York, right?
No. Hell no. I'm going to be eating lock bagels and pizza and going to see shows on Broadway.
Also, always check out in Times Square, check out the TKTS booth.
Okay.
Like, it's for cheap. If you go, like, I think 2 o'clock or something, or the day of, like, Broadway show. Like, if you wanted to see another Broadway show, like, they offer tickets for, like, $25. Because it's really all based on, like what the houses are selling on that specific day and whatever. And then the TKTS, you'll see the red signs that say TKTS, whatever. But I mean, you could go see, like, you could get like $180, $220 theater ticket for like $35.
Yeah, because there are seats that need to be filled, right?
Or right, right. So you get day of type of ticket. Or sometimes it's like the net. Sometimes like on Wednesdays they may have Thursday tickets or something. Yeah. But it's the program. Obviously, you could be a member. And my parents go see Broadway plays and stuff like all the time.
Yeah.
So like I know the model. If you want to see something else, I don't know if there's anything worth seeing on Broadway these days anyway.
Well, Funny Girl with Lea Michele is incredible. She apparently just absolutely crushes that role. And there's like a whole bunch. I could talk about theater and like pop drama all day, but there's like a lot of drama around Lea Michele because she's apparently, for lack of a better word, a total bitch to work with. And she's been called out for some antics in the past. And so people were mad that she got the role, but she crushes the role and it's only gotten better. So I would like to see that if we could see the production with her, but I don't think we're going to have time. I think that's a weekend production. And outside of that, there's like some other girl that does it that I don't really care that much about. So that's the only other one that I would be like really interested in seeing, but I like theater. I actually did plays, and I was like in choir and I was in theater when I was younger, before I grew into my body and started playing football. So I like that stuff a lot. I'm excited to go see at least one.
Right. D-Pick says, I can't believe you won't go see the Yankees game.
Why was
it boring?
It's boring.
Right.
It's boring. I mean, look, like I think that going to sporting events is, if you're going to go to a sporting event, you should either go to a hockey game or a basketball game. Like
I would stop at the hockey game.
Well, no, basketball games. Like if you get floor seats are sick.
Yeah, good luck. Okay, fine. I'm gonna spend $1,500 to see a bat. That's even worse to me. It's like, yeah, you're right. It's floor seats. Okay, but
yeah,
it's still a basketball game.
Yeah, but I mean, like that's the thing. If you go and get like floor seats in a bit, because that's the only time that I'll go to a basketball game. I only go if I get floor seats. Hockey games, like you can go to and just like they're sick anywhere that you're sitting, preferably up against the glass, but like anywhere that you sit, it's gonna be sick. Football games, never go to a football game. The worst, it is the largest waste of money that you could possibly, there is not a large
football games are like, football is like a made for TV sport.
It is. It absolutely is. It is significantly better on TV. There is nothing. If you get box seats and you're just stuffing your face and getting drunk the entire time, okay, whatever. But like you paid hundreds of dollars to do that when you could have done the same thing from your couch. I guess if you hate your couch, then okay, go to a game, I guess. But it's a terrible idea. Baseball games and soccer games, I think, are fine if you're like going for like a day game and you're just hanging out and drinking some beer and eating.
I can't
some
believe
hot dog.
You're putting soccer in there.
Soccer's fine, dude.
Soccer, like it's the same thing. Soccer is the best live sport.
I think it's
hockey's number two. But let me put a caveat. Let me put an asterisk on the soccer. Soccer games that matter.
Okay, sure. Yeah. I mean,
you go to a U.S. Mexico game. You go to a Ireland, Italy. You go to something that really matters.
Yeah.
A World Cup qualifier. You know you can't say MLS.
Yeah, I was going to say
games
clarify,
or like that. Dude,
let me clarify that I'm talking about MLS games here.
Yeah, MLS don't
games are the same as baseball games.
Right.
Because I used to have my best friend as I was growing up. His dad had season tickets to the Rapids, and like we would go to Rapids games, and that was fine. We'd walk around and hang out and eat some food. It's the same thing as baseball. But I would love to go to a World Cup. I think that would be
2026. It'll be here.
Transcendental experience, right? Like bucket.
Well, how about this, James? They'll have a game or two in Nashville, I believe.
Oh man!
So we're going to a World Cup. We're going, and I don't care what it. I mean, doesn't matter what it is. It's the World Cup.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah,
and you'll see what a soccer game really is supposed to be.
Yeah, that sounds sick. I'm into that. But overall, going to sporting events, not. I guess if my kid wants to go, like, let's go. But I'm just not that big of a fan outside of floor seats for NBA games.
You know what's better than hockey and soccer?
What?
Pro wrestling.
That's probably true. I've
not a sport. That's not a sport. You're essentially going to a It's a mix of the two things we just talked about.
It's like physical theater is what it is.
Right. It's physical theater. Right. Exactly. When people are like, you watch professional wrestling, it's fake. Yeah. Yeah. Did you watch that movie the other day? You know, that's fake too. I mean, like, it's just because it's live, but it's live action. It's like going to the theater, mm-hmm. right? There's a difference between like live performance and watching the same thing on a screen is different. Like these are, they're actually there. They're actually singing. They're actually like, they're there. Now yeah. The difference between pro wrestling and theater is that in the theater, you can't like heckle the actors and the characters and take part in the show. While in pro wrestling, the crowd is kind of part of the show also.
Yeah. It's I used to love wrestling when I was a kid. I fell out of the allure when I like grew into my teens a little bit, but now when I watch it, like I can appreciate it in a different way. I think it's physical theater. I think it's cool. It's a cool thing.
And some places are better than others.
Yes. One question that we should probably hit before we end this. Is there a preference between 5-1-1, 5-2, 5-3, and MMA? My optimizer lets me only choose one type of stack at a time. Probably not a measurable difference. It mostly just depends on the size of the slate and the expense of the pitchers that you want to use. Like if you have two expensive pitchers, it's more likely that you need a value play as one off to make it work. If it's a smaller slate, maybe you need some one offs, but typically as the slate gets larger, you want to have that 5-3. As it gets smaller, usually you end up with less correlation. Rules of thumb.
Right, those are all rules of thumb, and you could submit those types of questions at theoryofdfs.com. That's what I cover on you. You send in your questions, and I give you the answers. Other than Mondays and Fridays, right? When Fridays are MMA, Mondays I'm here with you. I believe Wednesday this week we have a Grinders Live, so I'll be on Grinders Live, but there won't be a pregame show. But Tuesdays and Thursdays. Need questions, send them in. Questions at theoryofdfs.com. And James, people could find you, paterdfs.com.
Yeah, paterdfs.com. Been a really, really good start to the baseball season. I also have some really cool articles that are being written now by a generative AI program, which is pretty sick. I'm really proud of it. It's cool. Breaks down the models in like a format, which is cool. So if you haven't checked those out, those are still free until I stop making them free today. But you can go check out the other ones that are already free. And if you want to find me on Twitter, then you can find me at @Pater_DFS on the Twitters.
Give me those thummy thumbs on your way out the door. Hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, hit everything you can. If you want to get these Excel tools, feel free to go to theoryofdfs.com. They're in the advanced players course. Obviously, I would suggest you listen to the fundamentals masterclass, the 15 hours, to understand the concepts of why you're even using any of these types of tools. And remember, these are efficiency tools. You can do anything, all the concepts on why you're trimming here and why you're looking at the correlation between this, like you could do manually. Like you, there's no reason you can't. It just takes longer, right? Just using those concepts from the first course, how do you now, basically what I say in most of the episodes, how do you rearrange the numbers better than your opponents, right? Because it's not necessarily about knowing sports. When you have the projections here at Roto Grinders, right? Click on that link in the description, get $10 off your first month of a combo premium subscription. You get access to the Discord, you get projections, ownership, all the premium content, everything. Like once you have those numbers, once you have a good model, right, which we could provide you here, then it's just a matter of just arranging the numbers better than your opponents. And 20 to 30% of your opponents are barely even considering any of the stuff we're even talking about. So they're just like leaking all this EV and we're fighting for the rest of it. So get that theoryofdfs.com. Send in your questions@theoryofdfs.com. And I'll be here 11 a.m. Monday through Friday. And I'll be answering them on the DFS pregame show on rotogrinders.com.